They then try to ensure this balance themselves, but forget that in doing so they are throwing something new into the balance and thus keeping it moving. A balance is created at the latest when a person dies. When looking back on their life, they experience several times in their own emotional body what they have triggered in other people and what they have had to experience as a result of their actions. This applies to good actions as well as bad ones. It is easy to imagine that this process is not a pleasant affair for those who have harmed others during their lifetime. But you can achieve this balance during your lifetime by taking responsibility for your actions and sincerely regretting if you have harmed someone. You can apologize to the person affected at any time and then you won't be served it when you look back on your life. The main thing is that the apology was sincere. This principle is reflected in both spiritual and material matters and has only one goal, neutrality. The meaning of life. The soul decides before birth to face certain issues in life. There are souls who only undertake a few tasks and others who want to experience everything at once. Once the experiences have been made as a human being, they are stored in the soul as processed and experienced. This is also the reason why one is reborn. Since one cannot internalize all the topics relating to human existence in one life, there is the possibility of rebirth. The learning content is therefore spread over several lives, which also makes a lot of sense. There is another reason for this division. The quality of life 1,000 years ago, for example, was different from today. It offered people different opportunities for development. Because the earth and humanity are changing and constantly developing, every time also offers different opportunities for growth. According to this principle, people gain new consciousness from life to life, as shown schematically in figure 6. The circle symbolizes the soul, and the pieces of cake symbolize the lives already lived and those that lie ahead. However, most people do not consciously remember the lives they have already lived, past lives. And that is a good thing. It is actually a protection so that you can concentrate fully on the tasks at hand. It no longer matters how or as who you have already lived, because the essence has been stored on the soul level and is available to you as a basis for action in this life, regardless of whether you had these experiences as a poor farmer or as a high priest. This means, if you experienced painful boundary violations in your last life and learned to defend yourself and set boundaries in the course of your existence at that time, then this awareness is still available to you today and you no longer have this topic on your list for the next lives, because it became conscious through lived experiences. Why is this sometimes arduous, earthly life even necessary when it seems to be easy or in the afterlife? This question concerns many people, and in order to understand the meaning of life, you need to know what life after death is like in the afterlife. There is often a belief that everyone is happy there and that you can get rid of all your worries in one fell swoop. That is why there are people who can hardly wait to die. In this context, it is important to correct this myth and create a concrete picture of the afterlife. The idea of a carefree life after death is the motivation for some to end their lives violently or to let themselves go until death occurs of its own accord. Based on this image of the carefree afterlife, it is understandable that a person would behave in this way in a seemingly hopeless situation. However, this bubble usually bursts very quickly. Because what you find after such a death is anything but carefree. The first unpleasant surprise is that you are still thinking. Even though you are dead. The next, far more unpleasant, is that you go through a review of your life and see how your life would have turned out if you had faced the problem. You see what consequences your chosen death has had on your relatives. You can't describe this phase without worry, because there is no turning back. You can't correct your mistakes, you've missed that chance. But that has nothing to do with punishment or guilt. You are simply confronted with the consequences of your actions. And that is exactly what you have control over. If, on the other hand, you made an effort during your lifetime and did your best and faced the challenges, you will also be confronted with the consequences of this effort when you look back on your life. And you really don't need to be afraid of that moment anymore. You see what positive effects this effort has had on your own life and on other people, certainly a worthwhile sight. People who have had near-death experiences confirm again and again in their reports that life goes on after death. If such people consciously remember the experiences during the death experience, this life review is reported with many parallels regardless of culture, belief and age. Life is not about doing everything right. Ultimately, it is only important to make an effort and to admit when you have made mistakes and to think about how you could do it better in the future. After all, you learn a lot from mistakes and can act more thoughtfully and reflectively in the future. Your own awareness grows by making mistakes, which you can observe wonderfully in children, for example. If something doesn't work the first time, children try other ways to reach their goal. They don't question the goal, but the way to get there and solve the situation with incredible creativity, provided you let them. Once you have finally finished your life review, a neutral state awaits the soul. You are simple. There is no longer any sense of time or space. You move through the power of thought and live from your memories. Unfortunately, you can no longer have new, sensual experiences in the spiritual world, for that you need matter and, above all, a body with sensory organs. This means, sensuality and thus also new, sensual experiences are reserved for earthly existence. For example, if you have never consciously smelled the scent of a rose, you cannot remember it in the spiritual world or gain this sensual knowledge there. For this, it is necessary to be human. It is the same with feelings. If you have not experienced the feeling of tenderness in life, you will not automatically know what that feeling is in the afterlife either. These are already a lot of reasons why it is worth consciously absorbing, using and appreciating life with all your senses. Because the more you learn and experience in this world, the more awareness and knowledge you will have available in the afterlife and for the next life. And if you now consider again what a process is necessary for a human being to come into being, it would be more than appropriate to reward this effort of creation with respect and appreciation. Otherwise, all the effort would have been in vain and that would be a real shame. 4. Contacting the deceased. Many people think that a medium has something like X-ray vision and can perceive all the thoughts you have. This is a big mistake and it has very little to do with the actual task of a medium. A medium is not a person who knows everything and who does not keep anything hidden from him, but someone like you and me. The only difference is that the medium has an increased ability to perceive. This is not used all the time, however, but only when he is working. So there is absolutely no reason to be afraid of people with mediumistic abilities, as they have their own burden to bear just like everyone else. Perhaps this chapter can help to correct this distorted image and make it clear what services mediumistic people can and should provide. For all those who, after reading this chapter, get a taste for it and want to practice and refine their perception, there are suitable exercises in Chapter 5 for all the topics covered in this chapter. How should a medium work? Many people confuse the job of a medium with the work of a fortune teller or clairvoyant. Comparing this is like comparing a baker with a butcher. Both are craftsmen and produce food. But that's where the similarities end. A fortune teller gets information about a person from the psychic energy body. Everything we have experienced in our lives so far is stored there. The fortune teller has the ability to read this body. Unfortunately, however, they usually also make predictions about the future, which are deduced from this information and sold as actual future forecasts. Fortune tellers, people with mediumistic abilities and anyone whose gift cannot be precisely identified are generally referred to as clairvoyants. Strictly speaking, there is no such thing as clairvoyance. In comparison to a fortune teller, a medium is able to perceive the spiritual level in addition to the psychic level. Since the spiritual level can exist independently of our world, certain skills are needed for this communication. The following comparison shows the difference between the spiritual and psychic levels. The psychic level is like reading a book on a certain topic. You just have to be able to see and read to do that. The spiritual level, on the other hand, is comparable to discussing the same topic with a person. This requires knowledge of the topic, the ability to communicate and to express one's own thoughts and feelings. A medium is therefore an interpreter between this world and the next and must be equipped with the appropriate talents so that there can be any clear communication between the two worlds. In the best case, a medium uses all physical and mental senses to mediate between the deceased and the relative. All physical senses also have a spiritual equivalent. For example, one does not call it hearing, but clairaudience when speaking of the spiritual sense. These clairaudience senses have atrophied in many people, as they are not necessarily needed for daily survival. In extreme situations, however, they are still activated unconsciously. Remnants of them can still be found in our language, for example when we say, that made me clairaudient, but very few people use them consciously. A medium uses these clairaudience senses consciously and can thus receive and translate impulses from the spiritual world. It is easiest to imagine these senses as antennas. The clairaudience antennas are somewhat longer and have a greater range than their physical counterparts. However, the clairaudience senses are not developed in all mediumistic people from childhood. In some cases they remain activated and in others they atrophy, so that they can only be used again through training. What is this sensory perception used for? If the medium has contact with a deceased person and this person wants to tell something about his life, his hobbies or habits during his lifetime so that the relative can recognize him, then the following is important. The deceased can use all of the medium's bright senses as channels, provided they have not atrophied, to communicate, for example, that he has drowned in a lake. He can then input the following to the medium. A picture of a lake. The sound of rippling water. The feeling of being wet. The feeling of tasting water. Distinctive smells from the body of water or the area where it happened. However, if the medium only has two channels available, it can happen that he draws the wrong conclusions because the picture is incomplete and not fully utilized. This means that the more senses are available, the more concrete the sensitive person's statement will be. In addition, the deceased can only work with the knowledge and experiences that the medium has stored in his or her brain over the course of his or her life. This is comparable to a computer. If the sensitive person has stored many first names in his or her brain for some reason, the deceased can use this pool and click on a corresponding name on the medium and thereby activate it. The medium then only needs to say this name, as it comes spontaneously into his or her head. However, if the mediumistic person does not have a good memory for names, names will not be one of his or her specialties. Therefore, it is important for every person with such a talent to feed and supply this personal computer with new information as often as possible. This means that more opportunities for exchange between this world and the next are available and the statements become much more concrete. It is actually like learning vocabulary when you learn a language. Grammar alone is not enough, and the more vocabulary you have at your disposal, the more precisely you can express your concerns in the language you have learned. The next area that plays a very important role is the medium's emotional world. It is essential to keep working on your own personality in order to release blocked feelings. This is so important because emotions play a fundamental role in the contact between the deceased and relatives. For example, if the deceased wants to express how much he loved the relative, then it is important that the medium also knows, allows and can feel this feeling. However, if the medium is afraid of love and has problems feeling love due to their personal history, then this potential is not freely available to them. But this is precisely what could be the decisive and healing information for the bereaved. Various factors are important in order to achieve the best possible result when making contact. A connection is certainly possible even if not all components are present, but a medium should contribute everything that is their responsibility to this. Figure 7 shows which interaction is important and that it is not just the skills of the medium that are crucial for an optimal result. The best result is achieved when all those involved have the necessary willingness to exchange information and are in good shape. The exchange between medium and deceased takes place on a spiritual level. The exchange between relatives and medium takes place on a physical level via language, and the connection between relatives and deceased Obanam should be the spiritual level. If all of this is in place, everyone involved will have a satisfied and good feeling after the conversation. However, as soon as one of them holds something back or is not informed for various reasons, this will influence the outcome of the contact. Unlike a fortune teller, a medium should not make predictions about the future. It should concentrate on its task of helping people cope with grief. It should help cope with the loss of loved ones and support the grieving process. Communication with the otherworldly level should be used to express things that could no longer be said during life. A medium must be able to support people in their grief, support them and give them comfort so that they can eventually concentrate on themselves again and be able to live again. A medium is not supposed to misuse their abilities to answer questions such as, "Is my husband cheating on me?" or similar. A serious medium is able to establish contact with the spiritual world without any aids and at any time. If aids such as alcohol, drugs or other things are involved, the effect is rather the opposite. The senses are clouded, severely impaired or distorted. It is therefore only logical that such factors limit the ability to perceive much more than they promote it. Contacts with the afterlife are not a parlor game for the pub and should not be played when drunk, as you are no longer attentive enough. In addition, such conversations deserve an appropriate and protected setting. Important basics for mediumistic contacts. In order to do your job well as a medium, talent alone is not enough. A number of other things must be present for this talent to develop. It is comparable to all other talents. If someone has an extraordinary athletic gift, it must be promoted through training, discipline, etc. until it can actually be used. You do not need physical muscle mass for mediumistic contacts, but the nerve strands and sensory perception must be challenged and strengthened through constant training. Otherwise, as with any talent, you will very quickly reach your limits. As in competitive sports, it is important for sensitive people not to overexert themselves on the one hand, and not to take it easy on the other. As with everything, it is a question of the right amount. In order to find the right dosage for training and practice, it is essential to have healthy boundaries. Unfortunately, many people with mediumistic talents have hardly any noticeable boundaries because they believe that you don't need such things for spiritual work. This is a big mistake with far-reaching consequences for the medium and those around them. If you don't have healthy boundaries, you can't tell when you've had enough or are overwhelmed. Unfortunately, you only feel the overload much too late. For example, after physical breakdowns or states of weakness. Without boundaries, you can't distinguish exactly which feelings or even symptoms belong to you and which to the other person. A medium should therefore always make sure to be centered and with yourself, because this is the only way to prevent abuse of the gift. But how can you feel your center if there is no vessel or framework that would define this center? You need emotional boundaries so that your inner center can be felt at all. Another problem that comes with a lack of ability to set boundaries is not being able to consistently say no. Now the question arises as to whether this is even important in mediumistic contacts. It is essential because if you are in contact with the deceased and want to end a connection at some point, then you have to be able to say no because there are very excessive deceased and also relatives who always want more, more and more. At some point, the medium is so exhausted that they will definitely not be able to offer their services to anyone else that day. Who benefits from this other than the excessive deceased or relatives? A good medium has an emotional boundary and knows that they themselves decide when they have office hours and when they need time for themselves. Just imagine being harassed around the clock by the deceased and their relatives without being allowed to say stop. It doesn't take much imagination to understand that in such a state you will eventually go crazy. Or your body will collapse first. It is basically the same with the deceased as it is with the living. In order to be able to provide real help, you have to be firm in your personality and also pay attention to your own needs. If you help without limits and suffer with the others. If you help someone, you are already dealing with a helper syndrome. This type of help is actually just a service to your own ego. Empathy has a different quality than pity. True compassion enables a medium to really give support and support to relatives who have lost someone. If you are not able to take care of yourself, you cannot take care of others either. If you take away other people's suffering or even physical symptoms and act them out for them, the other person may feel better for a short time, but the problem is not solved. The other person cannot then gain the necessary, related knowledge. Basically, every person is able to make contact with the spiritual world. However, the quality of this connection is tied to certain conditions. A person who is in a good position to make contact would be one who is able to set boundaries, can differentiate his own needs from those of others, uses his senses consciously and thus perceives consciously, is capable of love, is empathic, compassionate, trusts his feelings and respects them. Now you might think, that's asking a lot, but you can start by working on yourself. It's not about being perfect and being able to do everything, but about constantly developing yourself to optimize the result. After all, it's fun to discover and develop yourself without putting yourself under unnecessary pressure. A common misconception is the way in which a medium perceives the deceased. Many believe that the medium sees the deceased with their eyes and can then describe what they looked like, etc. However, so-called clairvoyance means something different. The sensitive person usually does not see the deceased with their physical eyes, but with their mind's eye. This means that an image is created in the mind, similar to the images that appear when you remember a dream, and the medium describes this image. This is what is known as clairvoyance. It works the same way with the other clairsenses. When people say, "The deceased tells me or I hear," you should not imagine that the medium is perceiving a voice from outside with their ear, but rather that it is a thought that they hear. You simply feel that this thought does not originate in your own head. So all clair perceptions take place in the medium's body, the impressions do not come from outside. The physical senses are necessary for the things that you perceive on the outside. Now and then it does happen that you perceive the deceased with your physical senses and not with your clair senses, but that is for other reasons. There are deceased people who want to be absolutely sure that you have noticed them, and that is why they use the material level to be perceived. For most people, the physical senses are less atrophied than the clair senses. That is why it is easier to use them and to perceive with them. The deceased sometimes take advantage of this. All these examples and descriptions make it clear that the human body is an important organ of expression. The deceased can show the medium on a physical level how they felt in certain situations in their lives. But to do this, they need the sensitive person's physical means of expression and sensation. The sensitive person then only has to put his feelings into words and can thus describe to the relative, for example, whether the deceased felt pain during the dying process or not. It is important, however, that the medium only makes his physical sensations available, not the entire physical body. This could lead to the medium not being able to get rid of the symptoms he previously felt for a certain period of time, which ultimately does not help anyone. Inspiration or imagination? The biggest problem for sensitive people is distinguishing between an actual inspiration and an imagination. Training and experience are factors that bring great security. That is why it is important not to despair if you have once again ignored the right impulse and the desired success does not come. Because inner and outer security grows through practice, practice, practice. Life offers enough opportunities every day to train your own perception. One of the most important distinguishing features between inspiration and imagination is the effort required. Inspiration is effortless and happens by itself. Imagination consists of many thoughts strung together that build on each other and finally form a result. This process costs significantly more energy and is anything but relaxed. These constructed conclusions take place in the mind and only draw on previous experiences. Inspirations, on the other hand, come from outside and draw on mental potential. This mental knowledge can also assess situations that it does not yet know and that have not yet been stored as previous experiences. You can imagine the way an inspiration works as if information were put into a funnel that is located in the head. If the funnel is open and not blocked, mental knowledge can get in and make itself known through a flash of inspiration or an inspiration. Constructed thoughts are more like having lots of letters in front of you and putting them together to form a word. You have to concentrate much more, and that costs a lot of energy. In addition, the horizon of thoughts is limited to what the person already knows. With inspirations, it is usually the case that you had not previously thought about the topic for which you need an answer, and suddenly, as if out of nowhere, the solution is there. Conclusion: the spirit contains all the answers, the mind or the ego does not. Inspiration, perception without having to have specific knowledge. Imagination, conclusion, assumption that is put together from collected knowledge. Inspiration and intuition. Most people are familiar with these terms, but the role they play in media and spiritual work is largely incomprehensible. Inspiration would certainly be attributed to artists of all kinds, but one would not necessarily expect it to be of great importance to people with media talent. Inspiration comes from the Latin, from inspiratio, and means something like animation, breathing life, soul or spirit. That is, it is a creative force that brings something to life. If a person is inspired, they are a kind of channel between spirit and matter in that moment. In this way, spiritual knowledge can be made visible and can be used by other people. Painting, acting, singing, but also mediumship are just a few examples of areas of application for it. The person who is currently serving as a channel does not need to think and does not need to know anything about what he is currently giving form to. On the contrary, as soon as he thinks about it and tries to grasp it with his mind, the door to the spiritual, creative level closes. In relation to mediumistic contacts, this means the following: strictly speaking, a medium does not need any information from the relatives about a deceased person in order to be able to make concrete statements about this person. The medium only needs to be inspired by the deceased to say certain things. The mediumistic person does not even need to understand what he is talking about exactly. It is enough if the relatives know what it is about and can do something with what is said. Inspiration means the passing on of spiritual goods by a person without it being filtered or controlled by him. The most difficult thing about it is not to think and to resist the urge to want to see the result already. But that is just a question of discipline, trust and practice. Intuition, on the other hand, is the ability to gain insights by looking at things or situations without having to think about them. So you suddenly have insights and know that they are correct without having to check them. But even if you did, they would stand up to it. The word comes from Latin, from intuia, and means to look at, to consider. So intuition is also very important for those with mediumistic talents. Regardless of this, most people would benefit from gaining insights by simply looking at situations. Ultimately, these insights come from the deep subconscious and it is simply a remembering of things that you already knew for a long time but that can only now reach your consciousness. Because there is still a lot of knowledge lying dormant in the subconscious that would be happy to be used. The thing about trust. Trust is one of the most important foundations for mediumistic work. Unfortunately, this is exactly the issue that most people have a problem with. For the majority of people, their basic trust in life and their own feelings was damaged in childhood, which they then have to struggle with every day as adults. The main problem is often that the environment in which they grew up as children was not honest with themselves and therefore not honest with others either. As a child, however, they perceived the real, inner state of their parents. But if they say, "I'm fine and happy out of self-protection," the child, he feels something different, confusion arises. Should you believe what the parents say, or should you trust your own feelings, which say something different? As a medium, however, you need to trust your own feelings. This means that you first have to correct and clarify your emotional world and the image of your own childhood in order to be sure what you feel and perceive. Because if your own perception has been unsettled by the parent's unwanted self-protection, this is not a healthy basis for working as a medium or therapist.